Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is Friday, September 2nd, 2016, and we're back.
Hi.
We weren't able to do a podcast last week, and the week before that was a bit of a calamity.
Yes.
For various reasons. I don't know if we want to get into the specifics. One or more of us were out of commission 2 weeks ago, and last week I was out of commission and still struggling with kidney stones. So now everybody knows. It's a lingering issue here that I'm still evidently dealing with. So pardon me if I sound medicated and in pain. It's because I am.
Yes. Yes.
But politics does not stop. We're 60, what, six-ish?
I think 67.
67 days away from the election. And things have been happening. Things and stuff. Every ridiculous story or non-story having to do with anything with the Clinton Foundation is blown up to a front page headline, even if it doesn't mean anything. Like today's was kind of especially funny, where the headline was "New Revelations About Clinton Donor Access Raise Questions." The question was somebody asked for a special State Department visa and was told no. So I don't know what questions those ask, because the question was answered.
No.
A donor said, "Can I have this thing?" And Hillary said no.
No, not so much.
But it's a story that, quote, raises questions.
Okay.
All right, then.
And then another round of emails came out saying nothing, I guess. It was like... basically confirmed everything she told the FBI previously.
Well, it was the FBI's transcripts, I think, came out today, and people were poring over those, and it basically
said everything for the most part. So
confirmed what she said
publicly. So yeah. So what she said to the FBI is what she said to the public, and so scandal.
It'll be turned into one.
I don't know.
No, the media has tried very, very hard over the last couple of weeks to say this thing's getting out of control. Nobody's going to tune in if this is Goldwater Johnson.
Right.
We better pump up these scandals.
Right. It's the thing we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, which was like the false equivalency of Trump and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump does something completely outrageous, which we'll get to. So let's find something that Clinton did that we can... make an equivalence to, and there isn't one. Yeah. And so we take these small things, and maybe some of you disagree and you think they're big things, but when the news story is, the transcript came out and exactly what she told the American people is what she told the FBI. I don't know how that's equivalent to taco trucks on every corner or going to Mexico. It's like, okay, cool. That's a non-story in any other election year.
Yeah.
In this election year, it's the same air coverage as Trump's shenanigans. I don't understand, but it's frustrating. I grow weary. I think everyone's got a little bit of politics fatigue right now. Certainly.
You would think, right?
As I canvass and knock doors and talk to people, I hear that. Yeah. Like, it's so early and I've already seen five of you. And you're like, sorry.
Not to mention all the ads they've seen, mostly for Hillary.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I just heard that the Trump campaign finally did buy airtime in Colorado.
Really?
Very little. Very, very little.
I saw a billboard for Gary Johnson on Sixth Avenue.
And I've seen two Jill Stein ads.
I have yet
to see a Trump ad. I've seen
not one. I haven't seen one. Or
I've seen a couple Trump Super PAC ads, but that's not the same.
No. I haven't seen any Hillary ads either, but I also don't watch local news.
How could you
news.
Have not seen any Hillary ads? I've seen tons.
I don't watch local news.
But on MSNBC.
Oh.
Even on ESPN, I've seen them. You really haven't seen any? That's hard for me to believe.
I don't watch that much TV right now because I'm really busy.
Rachel's busy doing real politics. Yeah. Can't get into the specifics, but
I work a lot right now because campaign season is... the election's coming. No,
and there are elections on many different levels, not just the presidential one, believe
it
or not.
That's right.
You often forget, but.
That's right, yeah. I have seen a lot of her ads on social media.
Yeah.
As I'm scrolling through Twitter or Facebook, I'm seeing these videos that she's posting. I'm pretty delighted by them, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that
they're
she's
pretty
doing
well done,
a
I
great
think.
Job.
And they hit the mark pretty well.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of.
I think they're going to have to ramp up and get even more.
Mean.
Yeah.
The ones that I've been seeing are like people that have been directly affected by Trump. So like this guy who was an architect who designed some Trump property and then wasn't paid.
Let's talk about
that
for a
kind
second.
Of stuff. Yeah.
Because it's pretty shocking that the media has mostly ignored that story.
Yeah. And
because let's think back before we get into that. Let's think back 8 years ago to Joe the Plumber.
Right.
Joe the Plumber wasn't a plumber. And he made a specious claim that actually had nothing to do with reality. Mm-hmm. But the media loved it because it played on this trope that Democrats and Obama want to raise your taxes and make it harder for small businesses
right.
to survive.
Right.
And me, look at me, I'm a small business owner. Well, he really wasn't.
He
quote wanted to be one
right.
or something. And it became this big story and he became this big icon. He turned out to be a lunatic, but that's not the point. The media loved
shocking.
Joe
yeah,
the
Plumber. Yeah, they did. They did. And Sarah Palin totally, you know, adored him and took him under her
well,
wing.
Well, the whole right wing did.
Yeah, they did.
And the mainstream media.
And that, but we have to remember that that was back in a time when politics was normal. And
it
like,
was it? It was a simpler,
you know, John
simpler
McCain
time.
Was running, who is a normal human being, a Republican, who is even like, I long for the times of John McCain.
He's John McCain had,
veteran,
had a lot of
he's a
yeah,
maverick-y, but like he's
he had a
like
lot of
a
awful proposals.
He did.
In
I voted
in
against him, obviously, and I campaigned avidly.
But compared
him.
To what
but
we have now,
what are we talking about? John McCain versus Donald fucking Trump? I mean, there's no comparison. There's not. It's not even the same planet that we're living on as we did then.
Yet the results of this election are likely to be
similar.
The same, if not closer than that.
Right, but so let's
which
talk about this.
Which is very
this,
depressing.
This
but
Joe the Plumber thing.
Right,
and,
right.
And this.
And the media has completely ignored the fact that Trump stiffed thousands of, or at least hundreds
yeah.
of small businesses,
yes.
contractors,
yes.
working people, mm-hmm. and it's just totally been glossed over.
It's wage theft. And
yeah.
I was thinking about this today because I was listening to NPR on my drive and they were talking about how, I think it's Chipotle, is there's a class action lawsuit against them because there's all like thousands of employees from across the country who are claiming that
they weren't paid overtime.
They well know that they were clocked out automatically when their shift ended, even though they continued to work sometimes for several hours. They weren't paid for that time. And it's not just a couple of people in one store. It's sort of systemic. And so they were talking about wage theft. And I thought, what a perfect pivot right now, NPR, to talk about Donald Trump and talk about all the people
right?
that he employed and had contracts
well,
with.
Well, they were independent contractors. So it's
sure.
by the letter of the law,
but,
it's not wage theft, but it's
right.
theft.
But it's theft.
It's
and,
fraud.
And they had contracts with him.
Yes.
And the one
and they
Hillary
have to sue
ad,
to get anything.
Right. The one Hillary ad that I saw that was my favorite, this was actually like maybe a month ago, was this guy, this architect, and he was saying that literally Trump's lawyer came and said, look, you're probably right and you'll probably win. And it'll cost you more money than you're owed to fight us because we're going to fight you every step of the way. So you should take like less than half of what you're owed.
Yes.
And the ultimate settlement ended up being about half of half. So about a quarter of what he was owed, he was paid.
Yeah, just to get something out of it.
Right. And he was intimidated. He was brought into the place that he had designed after it was built. There were a team of attorneys and people from Trump's organization that were all around this table and it was just him and he didn't know that's what the situation he was walking into. And they pretty much strong-armed him. I mean, they threatened him and said, look, you're going to take this ridiculously small amount of money.
So when Trump gets up there and says, I make great deals, that's what he's talking
about. That's what
he's
talking about.
He rips people off.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's one thing if you want to, which he's also done. He's screwed the state of New Jersey, you know, out of tax dollars and getting these ridiculous deals
yeah.
on real estate stuff. But when you're talking about mom and pop contractors
right.
getting screwed,
right.
putting in hours and hours of work and
yeah.
not getting paid or pennies on the dollar,
right.
That's a huge story. And I would venture to guess a very small percentage of the American voting populace doesn't even know about it.
Right.
Or has heard not nearly enough about
right.
it.
Right. And I can tell you, having previously owned a small business, that
that can ruin you.
That it can be the end of the business. Really. I mean, even a small non-payment or a small thing, you know, you kind of... You do the best you can and you get by and
yeah,
and
you know, you're in a month where it's like, okay, mortgage or food this month.
Right. And then somebody, you have these contracts and you look ahead and you budget wisely and you do all the things you're supposed to do. And when someone fails to pay you, which happened to me, it's devastating financially. Yes. It's absolutely devastating. There's just no other way to put it.
And then the legal fees to try to fight it.
Right. Then I'm going to sue you and it's, yeah. and I'm going up against, like, you know, some person. This man is going up against the Trump empire.
Yeah.
He has no chance and he knew it. And they were right when they said, if you want any money, you should take what we're offering, because if you try to fight us in court, we'll fight you till it costs you money at this point. So it's not just costing him the money that he was promised. It's now an additional sum of money that he has to pay in legal fees and time. And I don't blame people for taking the money that they were offered. I've heard some interesting narratives in the media about, well, if these people were really owed that money, wouldn't they fight for it and all this stuff? And it's like, look, that's not how the world works. I was promised an amount of money. I'd budgeted for my year with this amount of money and all the other contracts. And when that money doesn't come through, that's devastating. To pay additional money to try to get money back and to realize it's probably going to be a wash
is literally
feasible. It's not
feasible. Possible.
And you're still trying to run a business and take care of other clients and do other things. So you just kind of have to take what they offer and
you have to bend over and take it from Trump.
That's right. And so when we talk about his great deals, as you said, that's something that we should really be talking about, is the great deals are made off the backs of American workers.
And I hope and Hillary brings that up in the debate.
I do, too.
I really hope that she does, because the media is not doing its job. And even to go a step further than that, it's interesting. I hadn't seen the ad you're talking about. I'd heard about it.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing about that, too. And we'll get back to the bullshit both sides narrative. It's not even both sides at this point.
Right.
Because if Trump put an ad out tomorrow that said Hillary Clinton eats babies.
Right.
The media would call in her surrogates and say, is it true? And how many babies did she eat?
How many did she eat?
Right.
Where is he getting this information? If it's not true, refute it.
Right.
Right.
Whereas this ad, even if it was a spurious allegation that the media would typically say.
If it was, we would have known about it by now.
The Clinton campaign made this claim that Donald Trump stiffed these contractors, which he did.
Well, this person isn't really who he says he was, and this ad was made up. And I mean, the media, I'm positive, has looked into this particular man, because this ad was not, she wasn't in it. It was just him talking to a camera about exactly what happened. There were blueprints. He was talking about what happened to his business afterward. If that were not true, if it could have been proven that this man did not have a contract with Trump, or like none of this happened, we would know about it for sure.
Well,
it'd be a huge scandal.
The
right?
point is, any other campaign in history would sink it.
Yeah,
you can't run for president as a business guy when your business model was screwing.
Right.
And isn't it the whole conservative thing? Like, we love entrepreneurs and small business owners, and it's like, well, no, you don't, because the guy you're propping up for president literally walks over the backs of these people.
That's right.
For his own gain.
And that's his good deal. And I was thinking about this too when I was listening to this story. I was thinking, you know, the thing that sunk Romney was the 47% comment, right?
It was a lot of things, but that certainly didn't
help. Or like, let's say like the things that I sort of remember from the campaign that were like the big scandals was the 47% and the binders full of women.
Yeah, the media jumped all over those things and wouldn't let go.
Those things
are nothing
compared to what flies out of Donald Trump's mouth every day.
But that's part of the problem too, right? It's like the media probably has Trump fatigue at this point.
They have since before the primary.
There are so many legit scandals. Yeah. There's so many disqualifying things that are said. It's like, it's a moving target. It's like, what do we even lasso?
What do we even cover? And there's stuff going on in the world outside of Donald Trump land. So it's like, okay, we have to cover 17 things. 16 of them are Donald Trump, but there's also 30 other things in the world. So I don't know, latch on to one or two things he said and then let's move on.
And meanwhile, we get back to the false equivalency narrative. Well, we have these 85 horrible things on Trump. What do we have on Clinton? The email server and Benghazi.
Something.
You better find something in that.
Yep.
Well, there's nothing. Well, make something.
Right.
Oh, somebody.
Get somebody to come. Get a lawyer. Get somebody.
Somebody emailed
somewhere.
Huma Abedin and asked for a favor. Well, they didn't get the favor. I don't care. They asked for the favor. That's a story.
That's a story. No, it's not.
And
no,
literally,
it's not.
That's the headline that ran this morning.
Right. I mean, it's super frustrating. And regardless of how you feel about Hillary Clinton, it is a false equivalence. It is not true that the two are the same. That when Donald Trump has a scandal or says something or does something crazy, that there is something we can compare it to with Hillary Clinton. It just isn't the case. And the media needs to get on board with this idea that, like, we have one person who's running for president in a normal election. And we have another person who's running for president as a fucking crazy person.
Yeah.
And you can't really stop trying to make them comparable. They aren't. They just aren't.
Yeah.
She's never going to be. She's never going to do something outlandish enough
and
to
then
compare
they,
it
they
to
blame,
Trump.
They blame us. They say the liberals created the Trump monster.
No. What? No. Who said that? No.
Oh,
we didn't.
There
do
was
this.
A piece this morning. Was it the New York Times again or Politico? Somebody ran a story, said, no, it really was liberals. And it's like, yeah, no, we didn't show up in the primaries and vote for the guy. We're not cheering at his rallies when he says deport all the Mexican rapists.
Nope.
We're not the ones that assault African-Americans in the rallies.
I haven't been dog whistling for the last 20, 30 years about white nationalism and racism and Islamophobia and homophobia and sexism. I haven't been doing that.
So
nor have any of my liberal friends been doing
that.
And what
that
the result of that dog whistling has been is Donald Trump. We have stoked them for long enough that someone came out and happened to be this crazy billionaire reality star, came out and finally just said out loud the things that the Republicans have been saying sort of quietly and with a wink and a nod.
Coded,
right? Language for 30, 40, 50 years.
Right.
Somebody came out and said it. Their supporters said, finally, geez, you guys have been, tiptoeing
around
it for years.
This, saying,
we love this man because he's not doing that.
Right.
That's not a liberal problem. We didn't create this. We've been watching it happen. We've been watching the train wreck.
And sometimes they say, well, you liberals overreact and call things racism when they really aren't. I'm like, even if that's true, that has nothing to do with what's going on now.
Nope.
And nothing. If you're saying we trolled them into nominating an actual racist, that still is not us, man.
That's
we
still
didn't,
not us. I'm
we
not.
Didn't
we
it.
Didn't do this. We trolled you by saying you're a racist when you say racist
Look,
things.
If,
like,
if they nominated Ted Cruz, we would despise and be horrified and afraid of Ted Cruz, but we wouldn't be calling him a racist. At worst, we'd be saying, you know, his immigration policies affect Hispanics pretty badly, and probably will his criminal justice ideas probably affect African Americans disproportionately. We would say a lot of things, but
we wouldn't say he's a white nationalist KKK supporting racist
because he's
bigot.
Not. Whatever you want to say about that, he's not. And we never said that about Mitt Romney either.
No,
because he's not. We never said that about John McCain.
Nope.
Because he's not.
Right. This is a different thing. Donald Trump is literally stoking white nationalism in this country. And like, I think I probably called Mitt Romney a racist once or twice in my life because he probably is. John McCain, maybe not so much. Ted Cruz, I don't know. But,
Romney's more of an elitist.
Yeah, no, for sure. Elitist rich white guy. Yeah. There's a lot of class issues there.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about with Donald Trump
is
a completely different beast.
Yeah.
And can we get into the Hillary Clinton alt-right speech for a second?
Yeah, that's
because
another good
I think that that's
topic to hit. It feels like it was years ago. It was only about a week ago.
Yeah. So I have seen parts of it, kind of the highlights of it. And essentially, Hillary Clinton came out and publicized for your mom and dad and uncle and aunt who don't use the internet as much as you do, the term alt-right.
Yes.
And
which we know all too well because we're on social media quite a bit.
Yes. And if you aren't, and you just listen to us because you love to hear our voices and don't know what we're talking about or haven't seen the speech, the alt-right is kind of the craziest, racist, misogynist.
It's the younger, more tech-savvy racist.
Yeah, yeah, but they love to use, they sort of embrace their racism and they embrace their misogyny and they embrace the things that when you normally call someone something, they get offended by it. Mm-hmm. This group embraces it and
they've been able to come out of the shadows.
Yeah. So like these are the men's rights activists, MRAs, as we like to call them, on steroids. And it's about misogyny. It's about racism. It's about, all kinds of fun things. So one of their hashtags is white genocide.
Oh, yeah.
Something you may have heard.
Which Trump has openly retweeted.
Yeah. And his son recently. Hillary Clinton gave this speech where she used the term alt-right.
She laid out what it is
and she was precisely correct.
And it was completely factually accurate.
And Greg Dworkin was sort of obsessed with this idea that she was going to do this speech. And it was very cute, I thought, like some of his tweets about this speech, but he was exactly right. What he said she would do is what she did, and the effect of what she did, we'll see. But she called him out, and she talked about what that means, particularly given the new, what is it, CEO of his campaign, whatever that
Bannon
means.
Bannon from Breitbart.
Bannon from Breitbart. Breitbart is an alt-right publication.
Haven. Yes.
I mean, that's where these people hang out.
If you don't believe me, read the comments section. If the headlines don't give it away, if you think the headlines are too ambiguous, read the comment sections.
Read the article first. That's pretty great. And then read the comments and you're like, oh, okay, these people are the worst human beings on earth. And
yeah, it's unbridled racism.
It is. And misogyny and homophobia.
There's no veneer covering it.
No. I mean, it's literally feminism is a cancer. White genocide.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call feminist men? Cuck men or something? This whole terminology that exists within the alt-right community about liberals and particularly about...
They created a racist cartoon frog that they like to dress up in Nazi garb.
Yep.
And if you don't believe...
And it looks
again,
like Trump, right? What is it called?
Well, sometimes it looks like Trump. Sometimes it's a frog wearing an SS uniform.
Okay.
But if you don't think it exists, check our Twitter timeline.
Yep.
Just yesterday, there were people tweeting their little Pepe the Frogs at me to try to, quote, scare or intimidate me.
Right.
I was neither scared nor intimidated. What I was
incredulous?
I felt pity.
Yeah.
For these, because I don't think Trump's going to win.
No.
But if Trump were to win and people started tweeting Pepe the Frog memes at me, I'd be a little more concerned.
Right.
And my point is, this is real. The media doesn't want to accept it's real.
No.
Their reaction, the mainstream media's reaction to the Hillary alt-right speech was kind of like, geez, I don't know. Or some of them got mad about it.
Yeah.
Like Chris Matthews. Oh, they're really both slinging the mud now.
No. Oh my God.
No, this is a real thing, Chris Matthews.
Yeah. And then I heard someone else say like, this was a headline. It was like, both sides call each other bigots. This campaign is getting ugly. And you're like, wait.
Yeah, that was
Now, it is amazeballs. True. Trump did, after the alt-right speech that Hillary gave, which if you haven't seen it, you should see. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
She nailed it.
She nailed it. And if you don't know what she's talking about, do the research on it and you'll realize
terrifying.
She's exactly right.
Well, it's actually, I thought, honestly, she was kinder.
Than we would have been.
Than I would have been.
Well, sure.
Than the truth is, really.
She made it a point to say, this is not the Republican Party. But they're all backing it.
She was not as hysterical, I think, about it. And I think that's intentional, right? She was trying to be like, this is already going to sound...
She can't show too much emotion.
Well, this is already
going
to sound crazy that this thing exists that you don't know about Uncle Joe, but it's a thing. So I'm not going to even tell you the worst parts. I'm going to just open up the conversation about what this is, because if I got into the internet fucking comments section of the alt-right, no one would believe that I was being serious. I would sound like Trump, because it sounds so absurd that that would actually exist. And in fact... it does. So she really kind of like...
And there was no liberal equivalent.
Was, no. The liberal equivalent, I've heard a lot of people say this.
We don't have Pepe the Goat who wants to murder white people or something.
No, I heard someone say the equivalent to the alt-right on the left is eco-terrorists.
How many eco-terrorists have you seen
and
posting?
I'm like,
how many eco-terrorists
really
are working on Hillary Clinton's campaign? How many
Zero.
Eco-terrorists
Zero.
Does Hillary Clinton
Zero.
Retweet? How
right.
many how many
right.
famous eco-terrorists who...
Yeah, I mean, no, that's not a thing. Also,
no,
yes.
there are eco-terrorists out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there are. Absolutely.
And
but
they're probably
I would
not
like
going to vote for Hillary
to
anyway.
To say, though, and this may be controversial, and we can disagree or whatever, and you can send your hate mail. Eco-terrorists, I disagree with their method, certainly.
Obviously.
But also, what we're talking about with eco-terrorism is vandalism and not violence.
Well, sometimes sometimes it escalates to violence.
So we should differentiate the two, though. So we live in Colorado, and there's a very famous case of eco-terrorism that happened here in Vail. There was a ski resort. Vail is a very ritzy town in the mountains. It's one of the greatest ski towns in the world. Ski resorts, whatever. I don't ski. Anyway, famous for skiing and rich people. And
rich white people.
And they were building a new ski resort up in Vail. And it was affecting the moose population of Colorado in a way that made people angry. And so
probably made the moose kind of angry, too.
Yeah, which would be actually kind of scary.
But they don't have a lobby.
They don't. So this eco-terrorist group came and burned down the lodge as it was being built.
Yeah, that's eco-terrorism.
And that is eco-terrorism. No one was murdered. No one was killed. No one was injured. The only thing that happened was property damage.
Right.
So that is not okay. You should not do that. I am not advocating for eco-terrorism. It's very bad.
Yeah.
I would like to, though, talk about that and then compare it to sort of right-wing domestic terrorism, which is the Oklahoma City bombing.
Dylann Roof.
Which is Dylann Roof. Which is...
Going back, if you want to go back to the
which is
the Birmingham bombing,
which is violence against people rather than so. Again, I'm not advocating for eco-terrorism. I think it's terrible. They should not have done that. That was a bad solution.
It's another.
It is vandalism
and it is
destruction of property.
Another false equivalency.
It is a false equivalency. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So yes, they damage property. They cost people a lot of money. They'll put sugar in the tanks of the construction equipment that's going to be building this thing or they'll whatever, right? Like it's not good and it costs people money, but what it costs is money. What it doesn't normally cost is lives. The very, very few occasions in which it has cost lives are sort of peripheral, like unintentional, right? If you look at right wing.
Which still doesn't make it okay.
No. None of it's okay. I'm just saying it is a false equivalency. Like we're not trying to kill people. Right-wing domestic terrorism, I feel like, is different because its intention is to...
Well, when you say we are
not
eco-terrorists.
I'm not saying we. I'm sorry. I'm saying the left.
We're not even we're not even in Greenpeace, okay?
No, I'm actually not.
We support them. We like the Sierra Club. We like Greenpeace. But
it's
we're,
fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I don't even know.
We have never chained ourselves to a tree or anything like
that. No. I'm saying when I say we, I mean the left wing and the right wing and
Well, see, that you're falling into that trap where you're kind of doing it. I don't identify with... eco-terrorists in any way, shape, or form.
I don't either. I'm saying the left's version of this is that. And the right's version of this...
See, I'm not even sure that fits because how many of the eco-terrorists, probably most of them don't vote because they think the whole system is rigged and blah, blah, blah.
Correct.
If they were to vote, they will probably vote for Jill Stein.
Yeah.
Probably none of them are going to vote for Hillary Clinton because they'll find 8 million things.
I did not make this false equivalence. I'm saying
I'm saying it doesn't even work to even play it hypothetically when you really think about it.
I know. Because they're not even voting for our people. No. They're not engaged in the system that we're engaged
they're
in.
They're not active Democrats.
And they're, no, they're not anything.
I mean, I'm sure you can find one or two out there, maybe. But
right. Yeah. But do you, okay, we got way off track. But do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, like, I know where, what you're trying to say.
There's a difference between property damage and loss of life as the intention.
Yeah,
and so obviously. When someone said that, like, well, eco-terrorists are liberal, and you're like, cool, they don't, okay, but it's not the same.
But no are eco-terrorists a large part of Hillary Clinton's base and movement? Are they infecting Twitter?
Are they a large part of anything, by the way? Are they like?
Are they all over? Like, are they all over the Daily Coast comment section?
No, they're like, it's like 17 people that they're off the grid and live in some shack somewhere with goat milk. I don't know who they are. I've never met them.
Yeah,
they're not a part of my process, my party, my movement, my anything. They exist and they exist.
We don't know any personally.
Some of the same values that I espouse, and I don't claim them. And I think the Republican Party would probably say the same thing about lots of their domestic
terrorists,
but
they can't anymore.
Like before Donald Trump, they could, but now it's like you're saying it. David Duke is running for office in Louisiana and actively endorsing Trump, and the Breitbart guy is his CEO. At this point, you can't be like, no, those aren't our people. Like, you literally hired them.
Yeah. But
so they are your
people. But the Beltway media, they cannot say, okay, we have this one candidate. She may be flawed and she may have some squeaky issues with Truth or the Clinton Foundation and emails, but you have a real life fascist appealing to the absolute worst and having the support of real live, dangerous, horrible racists.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they do that, they risk alienating so much of their viewership that they're scared to do it. And they're also scared of appearing too partisan. This is the outreach of the Roger Ailes effect, right?
Right. Well,
that casting everything that's not Fox News as being part of the liberal media machine, and now everybody's scared of appearing biased.
Well, he did a good job.
He did an amazing job.
This is
why Trump is allowed to exist in this place where he is taken seriously as a candidate.
Yeah.
As a presidential candidate. And we're going to get to that probably in the second half of how this really blew up in the media's face in the last 48 hours or so with the Mexico trip and his unhinged speech in
Arizona. We will get to that. But one more thing I wanted to say about this racism in the media and this coverage thing is Paul LePage.
Big, big, big Trump supporter and surrogate.
Yeah. He is the governor of Maine. Is that correct?
I've talked to some Maine people about this.
Give me one sec.
Okay.
So he left a message for I think it was a state house rep, am I right?
Yeah, state house rep
who criticized him. And he used some very racist language. And the New York Times, I want to say it's the New York Times, I could be wrong, wrote it up and said something to the effect of, Paul LePage used what some would consider racially insensitive language. Now, if using the N-word, screaming it on a voicemail that has been recorded and released to the public is not, we can't call that racist.
And then later in that day, a tape came out where he said, people of color are the enemy.
All right. So if we can't take those recordings and play them to the public and say, use the word racist when literally talking about someone saying something that is, there's no other definition for it, then the media will just never call anything racist. No. That's the conclusion that I come to.
No, we've moved the goalposts so far that
I don't know what racist is to the media at this point. If Donald Trump saying a Mexican American judge cannot properly oversee my case because he's a Mexican and I want to build a wall.
He's not even a Mexican American. He's an American of Mexican descent.
Fine.
Born in Indiana.
Great. If that's not, if we can't say,
that's
what
racist.
A racist thing to say. If Paul LePage coming out and saying people of color are the enemy, I don't even think he said people of color, but whatever, are the enemy, and using the N-word and screaming it.
Yeah.
If that's not racist, I don't know what it takes for the mainstream media to call someone racist at this point. It used to be like, you know, don't, like the dog whistle was like, it's a little bit racist. Now it's like, literally, you can say the N-word and say that you hate all black people. And they're like, in seemingly racially insensitive language. And you're like, no, just call it racist. This dude said some racist shit.
Yeah, we've gotten to a weird meta-ironic place where
it's,
the right wing, especially the extreme right wing, has launched this narrative about how political correctness is so awful that they are now protected, ironically, by a layer of political correctness, whereas you are not allowed to call their racism racism.
Right.
And that extends all the way to Paul LePage and Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is like, it's racist. Hillary Clinton is a bigot for calling me racist because I like white people. And you're like, what just happened right now? My brain is going to shut down and go into like deep sleep mode, because what you just said was, it's bigoted of Hillary Clinton to call me out when I'm being a racist because that's mean to me. That's what bigoted means now. I can say whatever I want. If you call me out, you're a bigot. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And PC and police and the bullshit, like...
And the part that depresses me is, looking bigger picture, when he loses, it'll be probably electorally significant, but it'll be probably 5%.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be higher than that.
Well, even if it's 7 or 8%. I'd feel a little better if it was, say, 10 or higher.
Yeah.
But I still think it's going to be closer to 5 or 6, to be perfectly honest. Maybe 7 or 8. But
I don't.
That's way too close for my sensibilities.
Yeah.
It makes me take a hard look at the rest of America and say, well, I will grant you that a large percentage of you just didn't really tune in and just somehow saw this as generic R versus generic D and, oh, something, something, Clinton email so I don't like her. And I will grant a portion of that as ignorance. But the rest...
I think there's another layer, too, of just Hillary hate. I hear a lot of it at the doors. I hear a lot of people that I talk to day in and day out who are like, this lady today.
Sure.
She was like, I've been voting Democrat my entire life. Every time I've voted since I was 18 years old, I voted Democrat. But I hate Hillary Clinton so much, I might vote Republican. And she's like a 48-year-old Dem white lady. And she's standing there with her two grandkids who are like 2 and 3, 4 maybe. And I'm talking to her and I'm like...
So did you ask what she thought of Trump?
Yeah. So she doesn't want to vote for Trump either. But she's like, I'm seriously thinking if the Democratic Party would elect this villain of a woman, is what she said.
Yeah.
I might just vote Republican down ticket. She didn't say down ticket. She said, I just might vote for all the Republicans. And I talked her off that ledge, thank God, by talking about some of the things that I think are important and reminding her why she's a Democrat and other things I can't talk about. And she, at the end of the conversation, which lasted about 5 minutes, which doesn't seem like that long, but at a door, that's a long time. She was like, look, you know, the thing is, like, I am a Democrat. I just hate Hillary Clinton so much. And I just looked at her and I said, why? I mean, I don't care if you vote for her or not. I don't. Like, I do,
like,
obviously. But what I'm doing this job right now, I don't. I need you to vote for these other people.
Let's break that down for
a second.
But
I asked her, I just said,
really,
why do you hate her? Like, why do you hate her so much? And she said she just read. She's a lifelong Democrat. And out of her mouth came spewing the Republican platform. She just said she's a liar. She's dishonest. I don't trust her. And I could never see her as someone that I could trust in the presidency. And like, I'm not going to stand in this woman's stoop and argue with her for an hour. So I just said, okay, well, I hope that you consider X, Y, Z and blah, blah, blah. But it's so pervasive, this idea that Hillary Clinton is this person that she obviously is not. But it's so pervasive that even lifelong Democrats don't want to vote for her. And I don't know how we get past that. I don't know how we jump that fence or get over that bridge and say, like, look, you're just spewing Republican
talking points.
For the last 20 years, they've been saying this about her. Mm-hmm. And it's sunk in so much to the narrative of who this woman is that even lifelong female Democrats don't want to vote for her. And that scares the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm. Some. Many are fine and many really like her.
Yeah.
But some people, they have their antenna up.
Yeah.
And it spins around and it just gathers whatever's floating through the airwaves. And this is, again, credit Roger Ailes with figuring this out.
Yeah.
You just hammer an idea and it gets bounced around so much that it sinks into people's heads. And some people don't apply critical thinking to it. And
right.
that, and that's what I was going to get
right.
to.
Right.
It's like, let's break down what this woman's actually saying.
Yeah.
She's a liar because...
Why?
The Benghazi thing, you think she said something to the families that wound up being different because of the difference in intelligence that came out afterwards, or
is it Whitewater, or is it that
she was exonerated for?
I mean, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter the facts. It matters that people.
It matters the facts of people like us,
right?
Like when somebody says so and so is a liar, we say, why are you calling them a liar?
Right.
Because this, and then we were like, oh, that's interesting. We look it up and we gather the facts and we make our own determination. But a lot of Americans, the antenna is up and just whatever the buzzwords that have bounced around sink in.
Or this video that's been going around since Bernie about 12 or 13 or whatever it is, minutes of Hillary lying. And it's just
she probably saw that.
Cut video of...
She probably saw it on Facebook.
Of the last... 30 years of her public service and how she said one thing in 1992 and a different thing in 2016. So she's a liar. And she said one thing in 94 and a different thing in 2010. And it's like, okay, so we could make this of literally every
politician
person
ever.
That's ever been in any public capacity, be it a celebrity or a politician, ever.
Yeah.
But for some reason, this video is like the thing that people want to talk about. And that's not because she is more of a liar or she has more changeable views or anything else. It's because she's been in the public sphere for so long and she pissed Republicans off so early in her career.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been after her for such a long time that like you said, like you hear it enough times from enough different sources because it gets this like weird hurricane or tornado effect of like everyone's saying
the same thing. And you never actually dig deeper.
Right. You don't actually look at what's true. You just hear like everyone says she lied about this or everyone says she's crooked or everyone says that you just go like she must be. And you're like, yeah. No, it's really just one really specific set of people saying it and other people spreading it around because that's what media does instead mm-hmm. of what they should be doing. So I don't know how to convert that woman. I didn't try. That wasn't my role that day, but I do think it's a problem for Hillary and I think it's a problem for our country.
I think Hillary broke through with her DNC speech to some people, obviously not this lady, or maybe she
right.
did. And then this lady got 8,000 more chain emails from her cousins
right.
and whatever. But,
I think
she does need to do a little better job of connecting, but even status quo, she probably wins by 5 or 6 points.
Yeah.
But generic Dem who doesn't have the Hillary Clinton baggage, deserved or not deserved,
yeah. not deserved,
probably is going to win by 10 or 15, but she won the primary. And I know some of our crazy brain people think she didn't, she stole
she
that and
nope.
it was rigged.
She did.
Or
sorry.
She,
send your hate mail.
She
it's
won
fine.
By 4 million votes,
she
guys.
Won
I'm sorry.
Plenty.
And we voted for the other guy.
She won by every metric that you can win.
So
by every metric he set out. But anyway, no.
But no,
exactly.
That's interesting that you had that conversation because you got a bird's eye view or you got a straight on view on
yeah.
the ground of,
yeah.
of some of the headwinds that she
yeah.
faces and
yeah.
why it's, I mean, she'll probably win fairly convincingly, but it's not the walk in the park against a crazy unqualified racist that it should be
if it was anybody but Hillary. But she's a lady and she's been trying to get power for a long time, and there's a lot of people who just don't want women to do that. And we can break it down any other way you want to break it down, but I think the fundamental truth is, and this is not just men don't want her to do that, This is internalized sexism and externalized mm-hmm. sexism and all the things. And it's uncomfortable for people that she's making a power grab. It's not uncomfortable for people that men do it. But when women do it, it makes people uncomfortable. People of both genders or all genders.
You get
and
the
all
buzzwords of ambitious.
Mm-hmm. Ambitious.
And cutthroat.
Yep.
And
yep. We don't call men those things. Or if we conniving. Say a man is ambitious, we mean it in a good way.
In a good way.
We He's say so a woman ambitious. Is ambitious. You know, she's bossy. She's bitchy. She's cold.
She's heartless. Deferring her wifely or motherly duties.
That's right. Yep. 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 Why doesn't she want to just be a grandmother? Some woman said to me. Why doesn't she just want to be a grandmother?
She is a grandmother.
And I said,
and a good one.
I think she'll be a grandmother if she wins or she doesn't. And she scoffed at me.
This was one of the door people?
This is one of the door people. Why I have lots of interesting conversations. She said to me, why can't she just be a grandmother?
Why can't Trump just be a grandfather?
Right. Nobody's ever asked me that. Not once. But why can't she just be a grandmother? And I said, I think she'll be a grandmother if she wins or she doesn't. And then she slammed the door in my face. But the point is, like,
that's
she's
a great
still
comeback,
a grandmother, whether she's the president or not. Barack Obama's still a father of two young girls.
And he'll be a grandpa in
he'll
probably
be,
10 years or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I mean,
although maybe not. They may not want to have kids.
Who
knows? Who
knows? Right? I mean, it's an interesting conversation that I have every day. And I learn a lot about people. And I would like to say that, like, most people are lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And kind and generous with their time, and
even people on the other side of the
yeah,
aisle sometimes.
Yeah. I had a guy say to me the other day, this was maybe like a month ago, he was like, oh, is it that time already? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, look, I'm a Republican, so game on. And I was like, game on. And I walked away, and it was like a perfectly, he did not yell at me. He did not tell me that I was an awful liberal,
baby
you know,
killer.
Piece of shit baby killer. He was just like, game on. And I was like, right on. And then I followed him out of a subdivision and his drill fell out of the back of his truck as I was following him out. So I honked at him and I was like, your drill. And he like stopped and got it and was like, thank you so much. Oh my gosh. I, you know, whatever. Like, people are generally pretty lovely, even if they disagree with you. They're mm-hmm. pretty lovely. Some people are not. But like, it's just really interesting.
Well,
to
that,
see.
That's
like,
another thing that boggles my mind. That, well, it's another reason why Trump is losing and losing really badly in
mm-hmm.
the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelming the Hillary hate is a lot of people, maybe not really partisan. There's a few left. People think we're so polarized. And there's still people out there not really that partisan. And they see Trump as a big jerk. And,
yeah.
And an asshole. And
yeah.
they don't want a jerk and an asshole.
Right.
It's like, well, Hillary's lying and conniving, but whatever, I could sit down and have tea with her probably.
Right.
Or,
but Trump is like unhinged.
Right.
I mean, I have people all the time tell me, like, look, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I hate them both, but I can't vote for Trump. And I say, right. So,
and keep in mind, this is a state where the polling shows she's ahead pretty comfortably. And,
right.
And she'll probably win the state pretty comfortably. But
We're also a 30-30-30 state.
Yeah.
30% Democrats, 30% Republicans, 30% independents. A lot of those independents, what we call unaffiliated in Colorado, definitely have a side. They just don't want to affiliate. Like
well,
about.
You know, we said a couple weeks ago, why isn't Gary Johnson doing better? Last poll I saw, he was actually doing pretty good. He was getting like 13-14%.
Yeah.
Which is better than most states.
Right. We like our independent, like we talked about, we like the idea of being unaffiliated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most unaffiliated voters that I talk to consistently vote one way or the other, but they don't like the label.
Sure, they don't like
right.
the label, yeah.
But then there's those people that I legitimately talk to that are like, look, I don't care what party this person is, or I don't care about that. I care about what they care about.
Sure, yeah.
And
they're still out there, believe it or not.
And but I have to be totally honest, when you nail them down, I'm like, okay, what things do you care about that you want them to care about?
It's
they almost
the
always,
or
yes,
Republican
absolutely,
platform.
Absolutely. It's really
line
hard.
By line.
It's either you don't know anything about politics, or
you just don't like the label.
You really hate the label.
You
but when you really nail them down, I'm like, here's what I want to do.
You don't
want to
be
this,
called
this,
a liberal
this,
or a
this.
Conservative.
Exactly.
You just want to say,
I don't
I'm independent.
I hate Democrats. I hate Republicans. I'm independent. here's the things I care about. And they're like, the Democratic platform or the Republican platform. Yeah, and you're like, all right, sir, you should just, you just register as a Republican. You are one. Have you, I said this to my dad. He's my dad is registered unaffiliated.
Yeah.
Tells me all the time.
LOLOL.
I'm not a Republican. I hate the Republicans. I hate the Democrats.
And I said to my dad, I vote for Republicans in every election,
have you
every year.
Ever
all
voted
the time.
For a Democrat in your life? Ever. Ever.
Or how about an independent or a libertarian or a Green Party? Or
he voted for Ross Perot.
Oh, that gives him the cred forever, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely not neither, though. So,
yeah, no.
And he's like, no, I don't vote for Democrats. And I'm like, then you're a fucking Republican. I'm sorry. Like,
it's all right. I mean, he can keep the title, but then you'll see a poll and the splash will be Donald Trump leading with independents in Colorado by 10%.
Right.
And it's like,
they're not independents.
They just don't label themselves
that way.
They
like to
way.
Be like Westerners and independents.
And this is why a lot when you see nationally and in a lot of states where there's more registered Democrats than Republicans mm-hmm. and people don't understand it and they think it's a lie. It's like, no, because typically a lot more very conservative people who don't like labels call themselves independent and always vote Republican.
Right. And people who don't know anything, and I don't even know why they're registered because they don't vote. I go to their door and they're like, I don't do this politics thing. And I'm like, you're a registered voter, dude. Yeah. You're a registered voter. And you have to register every 2 years in Colorado if you don't vote.
But
so
it's pretty easy here, too.
Oh, completely. You can do it online. It's very easy.
Florida was a little back. It's easier now. Back in the day, it was a little trickier. So I could see that here. It's just like, I think a lot of times, isn't it when you get your license, like you want to register and you just basically check a box?
Here, I don't know how it is now, because now you can online register. Now there's an app.
I'm pretty sure.
To register.
When
legit.
When I got my license in 2014, it was literally like, you want to register while you're here today? And it was literally checking a box and picking a party.
I registered when I was 18, and I registered unaffiliated because I was a kid. And I was like, I don't care about party. I'll make my own choices. I'll look at the facts, and then I'll make my choice. And then 2 years later, it was like, I just only vote for Democrats, so I guess I'm a Democrat. Yeah. And I am a Democrat, and I'm proudly a Democrat.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back and talk about Trump's whirlwind 24 hours of quote diplomacy and
some taco trucks
and unhinged psychotic Reichstag speeches.
So, all right,
we'll be right back.
Sad songs with a smile, telling sad stories that go on for miles. I'm looking dead into your eyes, getting tangled. I put my heart in your hands, watch it get mangled. Oh no. Here we go. Oh, 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 hurt heart. Oh, 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 my bleeding soul. Oh, 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 oh,
hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. And so Trump had an interesting full day, as we'd like to say. It was Wednesday, right?
I think so. I don't know. Days run together.
I'm sure you know, but he had an impromptu trip to Mexico where he met very, very briefly with President Nieto.
Yes.
Who is
Peña Nieto, yes.
Peña Nieto, who is not very popular right now.
No, he has like a 20% approval rating.
Yeah, he's not doing so hot, and this is not going to help.
So Mexican citizens backlashed pretty hard and said, what are you doing? Why are you inviting this man to come see us, to come see you, to come meet with the president of this country when what he does is denigrates our people and speaks ill of us? And there were protests in the streets, and it was a very big deal.
It all happened so fast, and I don't I am not going to claim to be an expert on the intricacies of Mexican politics.
Nope, I don't know anything really about it.
I know very little. I used to know more when I talked to my friend Paula, who is a producer for Telemundo, but I've tried to get her to come on the show. She really can't. But I don't know enough about it, but I figured, okay, if he's going to do this, then he's got to like stand up to Trump or insult him or say something.
Right. And the question from American side was, what the fuck is Trump doing? I mean,
well,
so he's,
it became very clear what he was doing, well, the way the press reacted.
I'm still unclear what it is that he was doing because...
Okay, but you were busy that day working?
Okay.
Well, I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
Because this is where it gets back to us trashing the good old Beltway media again.
Yeah.
They fell over themselves over this. And it was very boring and nothing. It was Trump standing at a podium looking really bored, looking tired, mumbling a couple things, and that was it.
But then Peña Nieto said, while Trump was sitting next to him, post their meeting, he was like talking about how a lot of guns and money come into Mexico from our side of the border,
mm-hmm.
and how that was a problem, and kind of hit him a little bit, which I think was good, and it's all true.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part that I saw, was just Peña Nieto saying, like, you know, if we're going to talk about border issues, we should talk about your border and how things are coming in to our country that are fueling some of the violence. And
yeah, but I mean, what happened was during, you know, Nieto gave kind of a very boring, blasé speech on U.S.-Mexico relations, and Trump just kind of stood there, and it was nothing. It was very...
Other than the thing I was saying, which is like, you know, he said...
Yeah, but the American media didn't care about what he said after Trump left.
Well, he was standing next to Trump, with Trump standing there saying, we have another border issue, and that border issue is you're bringing guns and money into my country, which is fueling the violence and the cartels. And so, and Trump just sort of stood there with this very, like... you know, bored, but sort of angry, but vaguely angry, and I don't really know what you're talking about, and no one briefed me on this.
Right.
Face. So
it wasn't presidential in the least bit.
No.
But that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
Is the important part.
Right.
After this basically nothing burger of a nothing burger that was thrown together, Trump leaves, and the Beltway media, even the quote liberal, a lot of the quote liberal media that's been following him around and hates his guts, like Katie Turr, I mean, they had hearts in their eyes, and they were just fawning. Oh, he looked so presidential, and he really hit it out of the park. He really, it's like, because he stood behind a podium and didn't, like, sling his own poop at Nieto.
Right. And I heard a little bit about, like, the great pivot again, right?
Right.
That's the big thing.
Right.
The
it was like
pivot.
This is the pivot. He's finally
going to be presidential.
Yes.
He's softening on immigration. He's not going to deport everybody. He's
softening on immigration.
He's finally
right.
softening. He finally is going to reach out to the Hispanic vote. He's finally going to do this thing that we've been waiting for him to do. I can't
believe
it.
And Patrick Healy
it.
In the
Yay.
New York Times even posted this just fawning article about how great it was for Trump to do this, and it proves that he's up to the moment and he's presidential. I mean, first of all, he didn't do anything but stand and look bored.
Well, and somebody said, like, it's the first international trip of this presidential election, and you're like, all right, he was going to Arizona to give a speech and, like, popped over to Mexico for 5 minutes to have a nothing conversation and came back. Yes,
but it worked.
That as the greatest international meeting that's ever been held by a candidate.
Which
come
is
on.
Exactly how the Beltway Press covered it. Now,
then,
cue a couple hours later, and because we knew this was coming, he's like, well, he's going to give this big immigration speech.
And the whole media was like, it's going to be so great. Like, He's finally softening. He's going to Arizona. Why he would do it there?
Will his followers go along with
it? Right? Will they go along with this?
And I'm thinking...
He's not going to deport people.
He's going into Arpaio country.
Uh-huh.
Arizona,
and Jan Brewer.
Jan Brewer. Arizona conservatives are... They're out there, man.
And, okay, just to quickly touch on this. I think there's a reason for that, but I think it's the wrong reason. So Arizona is definitely a border state.
Yes.
And there's a lot of immigrants that come across the border into Arizona.
Yeah.
They have a very large immigrant population.
Yes.
And I used to work for this lawyer who was a conservative, and we had this ongoing debate about politics, which was kind of unfair because she was my boss, but we can talk about that later. like in the workplace. And she was saying, you know, we were talking about pot legalization at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, man, if I lived in Arizona, I wouldn't want pot to be legal and I wouldn't want immigration to be legal. And I was like, if I lived in Arizona, I would definitely want pot to be legal, because that would mean that there wouldn't need to be the influx of illegal pot coming from Arizona that's creating all of this crime that you're so upset about.
Yeah. You think a lawyer might put those two
literally looked at me and said, oh, that's a really good point. And I was like, what did you just say?
That you somehow never thought of before?
Like, when we legalize pot in America, we can start growing it here. We don't have to import it from drug cartels in Mexico. That's
regulate
a good
it
thing.
And tax it.
Yeah,
and
that's a good thing. And she was like, great point. So, yeah. Anyway, so back on track. So Trump gets back to the States after a basically nothing meeting.
Yes.
And he
decides
to
give... That the
media
falls over themselves and thinks is
pivoting,
the Paris Peace Accords.
He's pivoting. He's going to be so moderate. He's softening his immigration policy. He's so presidential. He's the first international trip of a candidate, although Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, so whatever. And then, Travis, please tell us about what happened in Arizona with his speech.
He went completely off the rails and gave one of the most horrifying, frightening, racist, unhinged, megalomaniacal, crazy speeches that he's given to date. And that's saying something.
Right.
It was, I didn't see it in its entirety, I will grant you, but it was worse than I think the RNC speech, which was terrible.
Right. I heard someone describe it as Trump, the first speech he ever gave, right? Which is the ones where Mexicans are rapists and they're sending their worst people over.
Right.
And I'm sure some of them are nice.
Yeah.
Some commentators said, so it's that speech on steroids.
Oh, but that speech was 10 minutes. This was like
right.
70 minutes.
Yeah, they said that was that speech on steroids. That every bullshit thing everyone in the media said about him softening or him changing his plan.
It was like he punked them on purpose.
Right.
Almost.
And all of his surrogates were saying the same thing. It wasn't just the media.
No.
All the people who worked for him, Kelly Conway.
This all seemed orchestrated.
Yeah. They were like, no. This is the time. He's going to do this. We're going to court the Latino vote. This is what we're doing. We went to Mexico. They're all prepping everyone for this great softening.
And they're
softening.
Eating it all up.
And the media is like, yes, love it. We're going to have a horse race. And then he comes out and gives this insane, racist, white nationalist, worse than they're all rapists speech. And then his surrogates are left to do what?
Did you listen to K-Gro yesterday?
No, unfortunately, I did not.
You'll want to go back and check it out if you have time, because Armando gave a really lovely, eloquent breakdown of the speech, of what it meant, of why it was horrifying, you know, coming from a Latino man himself.
Right.
And it was just really, really powerful and moving. And I was like, well, I wish Armando had his own MSNBC hour.
Everyone go listen to K-Girl and listen to Armando.
Yeah, go listen to the Thursday the first show.
It's K-Girl in the morning, by the way, in case you don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't watch it at all. I was briefed on it and then watched a couple of clips on social media. Sorry if I'm failing all of you right now. I just don't have a lot of time. But I also looked at a lot of the responses, and
you know, a lot of them were dumbfounded.
Yeah, but I also like it's interesting because he's been doing two things, right? Everyone was talking about he's going to soften on immigration, he's going to soften on that stuff and try to court Latin American voters, and then he also, I'm sorry, Latinx voters, and then he also tried to court Black voters since we've talked. And
sorta,
it is,
kinda.
It is. So I think I think it's fair to say Trump did not try to court Latin American Latino voters. I think that's fair to say. Like,
in his mind,
everyone
maybe
said
he
was going to, and he definitely did not do that. What he did do was sort of strengthen his position on illegal immigration, immigration in general, building a wall. He said at one point,
deportation force.
Yes, the deportation force, and he said, "I loved this. We did talk about the wall. We did not talk about who was going to pay for the wall." And then Peña Nieto came out and said, "No, we did." And I told him, "I'm not going to pay for it. Like, we're definitely never paying for the wall."
Of course.
And then, but this is what my question is: is like, he went to Mexico, met with the president, had this boring thing happen, came back. Peña Nieto came out and said, "No, we did talk about that, and I definitely said I'm not paying for it." And like an hour later, he gives this sort of off the rails, racist bullshit speech, and I wonder if he's like, fuck that guy. Now I'm going to just rub it in and I'm just going to hate Mexicans more.
That's one working theory.
That's what I thought out of it.
That's hard for me to swallow, that even Trump is that unhinged and crazy that he would throw out his whole new campaign strategy. But it's possible.
I think that's exactly what happened. He doesn't have a new campaign strategy. He has a new staff and he listens to them when he feels like it. And he does Trump when he doesn't.
You're probably right about that.
Can't get another staff to make Trump not be Trump.
So was it the same night or was it earlier today? I think it was yesterday that an actual Hispanic guy himself, Trump surrogate, came out and said, what Trump is doing is really important. Do you want to? And he said this completely unironically and not kiddingly.
Yeah.
Do you want taco trucks on every corner?
So what he said was, my culture is very dominant. And if you don't do something about this, there's going to be a taco truck on every corner.
What a bizarre thing to say on so many levels. First of all,
do you know liberals at all?
For anybody. Conservatives love tacos. Are you kidding me?
We love food trucks.
Yeah,
that run food trucks are not liberals.
They probably don't like the taco trucks so much.
But like, it became this entire internet sensation.
Because it's a crazy thing. It's something you'd see on Saturday Night Live. It literally is. Mm-hmm. Like, if they had a fake Latino Trump surrogate in a fake interview, that's a line that would probably get some good laughs. Like, what do you want, taco trucks at every corner?
And people cheer. Yes, I love that. And that's exactly what happened on the internet.
And I'm thinking that would be great.
Everyone said, like, that should be the new platform for the Democratic Party.
Well, look, this guy's obviously never been to Austin San Antonio
or Denver
or L.A.
or Portland. Well,
Denver, there's not as many. There's a few.
Are you kidding me? Well, I live in Lakewood. There's literally a taco truck on every corner in my neighborhood. All over the place.
Downtown, I guess it's hard to park and get permits and stuff.
Yeah, totally, right? Portland, there's an entire, what they call...
industry.
Truck pods, which is just like a... basically,
well, San Antonio,
giant parking lot that just
everywhere.
Is covered with... But,
especially
but so,
the suburbs.
Yeah, so like...
And they're good.
Oh my God, the best.
I wish there was a taco truck on every corner.
God,
I really wish
so
there was a
great.
Taco truck on the corner by my apartment, because when I'm hungry for lunch and I could really go for a taco... you could go to Torchy's, but it's kind of pricey and there's a wait. It's right. Like, I really could use a taco truck on Bannock and 9th.
I agree. Hey, Denver foodies, if you have a taco truck.
So what was it that the Colorado Democratic Party sent a taco truck out in front of the Colorado Trump headquarters, which oddly is in Aurora?
Yes, which is very weird.
I'm like 225 in Mississippi.
Yeah, I would think it'd be in Colorado Springs. But no, yeah, so the Colorado Democratic Party... shout out. partnered with a taco truck and had them go outside the Trump headquarters and registered voters and had tacos and had, quote, conversations about the election.
You know, that's a great place to do it anyway, because I used to work there and there's a lot of businesses there.
Yeah.
So that's a great place to put a taco truck anyway.
Hell yeah. And we're funny. We got some snarky people in the Colorado Democratic Party, I can just tell you. And they're good at their jobs. I was very heartened to see that.
Yeah, it was good. It made Time Magazine.
Yeah, I saw that. It's kind of awesome. The other thing coming out of that story was a former Trump surrogate who was on his like Hispanic Leadership Council or something. I don't know what
quit,
they call it
as
or
did
whatever.
A bunch of people.
Quit and then came out publicly and said, look, you know, from my understanding of what's happening in this campaign, part of why he's doing what he's doing is I really don't think he wants to win. I think he wants to create a media empire for white nationalists. That
yeah.
That's really like, he's like, I worked with him for a while and like everything that I saw, he would get good advice and he understood that it was good advice, but he didn't take it because his goal is not to win. His goal is to create a media empire, and he's going to have many, many millions of people that will watch it. The same people that voted for him in the primary.
That's another example, not to cut you off, but imagine if a Hillary surrogate quit and said,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if she's trying to win or not. I just think she's trying to enrich the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
Even if there was like right. nothing to that,
right.
that would be the biggest story yep. in the universe.
Yep. And this man worked as a, you know, an advisor to Trump closely on, because the Republican Party has been trying to reach out to Hispanic voters, probably pretty closely with Trump. And that's his opinion. His sincerely held opinion is, I think he understands what is good political advice, and I think he's ignoring it on purpose because he doesn't want to be the president. He wants to create
a media empire.
Yeah. And he,
which makes sense.
And he's courting his audience right now. That's what he's doing. He's yeah. not courting voters. He's courting an audience of people who will come and listen to him and watch his network and maybe pay for it and have advertisers and that's what he's doing.
And he has to sort of toe the line and he can't just go completely bonkers and like start hurling racial epithets.
I mean,
because
he's
getting close, but if he actually crossed that line, then there might be like pressure to like
what?
Put someone else on the
no,
ballot.
No, that's not an option. It's not an option. It's Donald Trump now.
So maybe he will. Maybe the last few weeks of the campaign, he'll just completely go off the rails.
Just N-word everywhere, and just I mean, I don't. I just there is no option anymore for the Republican Party. That ship has sailed. And I think on that note, you have to really look at if you're a Republican, which I'm sure you're not. If you're listening to us,
no,
but,
we got a couple. We got a couple.
What does that say about your party? Like, I know you had 16 people running, and so it's a weird split, and nobody really galvanized behind anyone other than him, and so maybe
that's
the white
kinda,
nationalists won yeah. because there were more of them than there were rational people who couldn't decide on one person. I understand all of the horse race stuff, but what concerns me is that there is a large enough contingent of racist nationalist white people in your party to elect someone like Donald Trump, even if he doesn't want to be the president and he's doing this for some other cause, that is a contingent within your party that is the majority of your party, realistically.
Yeah, yeah, and so, the spotlight's been shown on that now. They've denied that for years and years
yeah,
and years and years. And again, they blame us liberals for pointing out that this was a cancer within the Republican Party for
right.
so many years. And now we've been proven correct.
Yeah.
So you want to say it's our fault. Fine.
I don't know what that means. I don't know how possibly could be. I don't.
You know?
Okay, the other thing I wanted to talk about, which we touched on just briefly, was his outreach to African American voters. So Hillary Clinton, I think, has 100% at the last poll. There was 0%
no,
of African Americans.
Well, she's getting like 89%, and then there's a few undecided. And
right, but there's
but he's
zero,
getting
zero,
like 0%
0%
to one,
Trump.
2%,
right, right.
Yeah.
And so what he did was he gave a speech, and this is, I'm sure you guys have heard by now, but this was like a week and a half ago or something. A speech about how African Americans should vote for him
because what do they have to lose?
What do they have to lose? And if you keep voting for the same party and you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same results.
The argument being that in these most African American dominated inner cities, that you have
Democratic jobs,
mayors and city council people, mm-hmm. as if there's mm-hmm. if structural racism and Republican state houses don't have anything to do with that, but that we won't get into the weeds on that.
Well, what I would answer to his question, what do you have to lose, is my answer to that question would be everything we've gained.
Your voting rights?
Everything we've gained. So it is true that we have failed communities of color, in mm-hmm. particular the African-American community in this country. It is true. As a society, we have failed them, and we continue to fail them every day. What they have to lose by having Donald Trump as the president is everything we've gained, which is voting rights, which is desegregation, which is still not a thing that we are particularly great at, which is everything. I mean, everything.
Which is at least bringing awareness to the problem of policing in communities of color.
Right. I mean, at least being able to talk about it and having a president come out and say, when I was a young black man.
And having the media cover it finally.
People used to lock their car doors when I walked across the street. That kind of stuff.
Yes.
But everything that we've gained in the last, 60 years is what we have to lose with Trump as a president. And it reminded me of the movie Bullworth. Do you remember that movie with Warren Beatty from the 90s? Yeah. It's Dana's favorite movie of all time. He loves it.
How could that be anybody's favorite movie?
Well, it's a great movie.
It's okay.
It's great. I love it, too. I love it the most. But it's his favorite movie. And we were talking about it, and he was like, it's like, the movie is a joke. I mean, it's intended to be.
It's hyper cynical.
Yeah. And when Bullworth goes into the black church and says, the line about if you don't, put down the fried chicken or whatever and start voting, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
Yeah.
That was an attack directly at the Democrats sort of taking for granted the black vote.
Right.
And the black vote not really being a thing that Democrats, they care about the black vote, but they know they're going to get it, so they don't actually do things for black communities. I feel like Trump, watched that movie and was like, hey, yeah, like Bullworth said. Like, don't count on them. They don't do anything for you. And it's like, cool. But
he's not the first one
But the difference is, the Democrats not doing anything for you is bad. But the Republicans actively work against you, right?
Well, it's not true that the Democrats don't do anything. You could certainly argue that there's plenty of Democratic politicians who haven't done enough.
Yes.
But to say they haven't done anything is asinine.
No, but I agree. But inaction in this case is better than what Trump would do.
And African Americans realize that. That's why he's drawing statistical zeros.
Exactly.
In polls.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
They get it.
They understand.
They're not dumb.
No, exactly. And so what the sort of Beltway media was saying is that when he says things like this, he's not actually courting the African American vote.
No, he's
courting the white soccer mom who thinks
he's
a racist.
Who doesn't want to vote for a racist.
Doesn't want to vote for a racist.
Oh, but he seems to care about black people.
He did say a nice thing about those black folks.
So maybe he's okay.
He's not a racist. Maybe I'll vote for him anyway. He's not courting the black vote. He's not going to get any of it, and he knows it. He's courting the white soccer mom in suburbia.
Like him going into this church in Detroit, and his questions and answers are already scripted. which again would be a huge story for any other candidate or Hillary Clinton. With Trump, the media shrugs. Oh, yeah, that sounds
like
Trump.
It's fine. Yeah. I mean, what do you expect? I don't know, a candidate?
But we'll still cover it he's really reaching out to black voters and pivoting and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's like, how much more of that? Here's another thing that drives me crazy. Just getting back to this gentleman who came out and said, I was going to be a surrogate for Trump. And
right.
A lot of them said, okay, that speech killed it or broke the straw that broke the camel's back. It's like, okay, up until that point, you were on board.
What did you think? You were waiting for him to soften, so you were supportive. And when he didn't, you became unsupportive. He was this
like
speech
he's given
he gave,
that speech several times.
Right.
Already.
This speech that he gave
is the same one he gave at the RNC.
Defense of everything he's said this far along.
Right.
So the fact that he did not soften on immigration is what made you leave. But his previous position, which is his same position, was fine.
Same thing. I don't
understand.
I would really. And again, it's like sometimes the media just doesn't. The simple things.
Yeah.
Not one of these people who have interviewed these people have asked that.
Right.
And you don't have to be a snarky asshole like us. You can say, Well, it seemed to me that in that speech, Donald Trump reiterated a lot of the same points he's made in this campaign. So why at this point during this speech? Because I really want to hear what they have to say.
Me too.
Because, like, it could be even better. It's like, you know, actually behind the scenes, he was telling a completely different story.
Right. And then when he gave this speech, it was obvious to me that that was all bullshit. Or it's obvious to me that I heard someone say from behind the scenes, Donald Trump, and we've talked about this before. This is something I've said before that was confirmed. He reiterates the thing the last person who spoke to him said. Someone literally came out and said that, and I was like, I said that on this podcast. Like, I feel like the last person who touches him is the person you get.
So
when,
depending on whether
the position you get when he
whether
talks.
It's Ivanka or Ivanka's husband
or
Manafort or
the
Lewandowski
Breitbart guy
or Bannon
or whoever it is,
Kellyanne
the last
Conway,
person to talk to him is the
or
person.
Ailes.
Can we talk about Kellyanne Conway for a minute and the rape thing?
Do we have to?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a story that's been uncovered, and I think it was a number of years ago.
Again, would have been a bombshell for anybody else but Trump.
And she said, basically, if women were as strong as men, rape would not exist.
And this was in the context of, like, being against
women
in the military or something?
Women serving in the military.
Yeah.
Women should not serve in the military because they're not as strong as men, and when they said that's not true because women have the same standards that men have in order to serve in certain combat roles, she said, but there's the raping. And they were like, what about that? And she's like, well, if they were as strong as men, rape wouldn't exist.
So rape doesn't exist in prison?
So rape is about strength, apparently. It's, okay. it's, this is his campaign manager. I just...
Again, and
Republican
it's
women
a blip,
flabbergasted.
It's a blip on the radar.
Yeah.
And we move on from it.
Again, going back to Mitt Romney's 47%. That's nothing compared to what happens in this campaign.
But,
nothing.
And that's the thing. It's overload.
Nothing.
It's every day.
Every day.
It's something that would blow up a campaign.
Yeah.
And
should.
You can't blow up a campaign.
Would and should.
Every day. So,
we
just
go
ignore it.
Oh, what a silly blonde woman. I guess she was back in the day and didn't
no,
know.
They
I don't know.
They don't even talk about it.
I mean, I saw it. It was in the media. It was not. It was in my liberal media. It was like Jezebel and like.
No. It comes across the.
I don't know.
The opinion desk at the New York Times. And they go, eh. Okay, how about this? Trump paid the IRS
again,
a $25,000 fine.
We have 40 Trump stories that are all the most salacious thing you've ever heard come out of a presidential campaign. Which do we cover?
I don't know.
Or, I don't know either. I don't know.
Somebody
like,
emailed
something like that,
Huma
like,
Abedin
remember,
and wanted a favor she didn't
remember
get.
Remember back
Ooh,
in
let's
the
run
day
with that. That's
when
juicy.
Whatever his name was, I can't remember, thankfully, said like... if it was a legitimate rape, your body has a way of...
Todd Akin.
Right, Todd Akin. He lost his race because of that. The presidential candidate for the Republican Party's campaign manager just said, women shouldn't serve in the military, and if they get raped, it's their fault because they're not as strong as men. So they... Like, that happened, and everyone's like, huh, okay. And it just passes you right by, and you're like, huh, that was fucked up. And you just go, what's next? And it's like, what is happening? You can't say that's not a thing that you should be able to say out loud as the campaign manager for the Republican candidate for president.
I think the media wants a President Trump. From their own personal interest, that's very short-sighted because he's threatened to try to rewrite all the libel laws to sue anybody
Completely.
Who speaks negatively about them.
He hates freedom of the press. He doesn't think it should exist.
But,
he wants to sue them all.
The stories all write themselves in a Trump presidency, and I'm sure comedians are kind of hoping for it too. And probably not comedians and reporters of color. You know, but
or women or, you know, no, LGBT folks or anyone that has any stake in anything that he would have control of or, you know, anyone who lives in the world who doesn't want to have a nuclear war. But, you know,
it would sure be fun to
be
cover.
Good news. Good news story. It's depressing.
Well, there's also a cottage industry, no matter what kind of publication you write for, of Hillary hate Hillary stories and Hillary's
yeah.
so dishonest and Hillary's so corrupt and
yeah.
The New York Times has actually become the worst at this.
I know.
They have a lot of different voices voicing a lot of different opinions, and the New York Times still has some very good stories, but boy, have they gone off the rails with this stuff.
Yep, I know.
I mean, I can't stress it. A headline today was that somebody emailed Huma Abedin to try to get some favor, and they didn't get it. And that's a story that, quote, raises questions about extra treatment for donors when the facts of the story is this person didn't get a favor.
That's like when your shady buddy who you see every once in a while calls you and is like, hey, I need a getaway driver for this robbery. And you're like, are you fucking crazy? I'm not doing that. The news story isn't, he called this reasonable person who said no, we should look into that person. The news story is he robbed a bank. It's not about the people that didn't agree to do it with you. It's like this person asked for something unreasonable and she said, fuck no. And so we're like, they asked, though. We should talk about how they asked. And she said, no, but they
no,
did
they didn't
ask
even,
her.
They didn't even bother with the but.
They did ask her, though. They did ask.
They didn't even bother with the but. They just,
like, okay.
They just said.
And she said, what? No? Cool. So she did, everything's fine? Why is this a news story?
Yeah.
Why?
Meanwhile, that Trump paid I think, $2,500 fine. Got completely overlooked. And
what was the fine? I don't know anything about
that. It was the whole Florida thing where he paid off the Florida AD to not investigate Trump University fraud claims.
Oh my God.
Not a story.
What? Wait. He paid off the attorney general?
He donated to her campaign, which it ended up was illegal, and he had to pay a fine because that's against campaign finance laws.
Of course it is.
And then in return, the AD Pam Bondi did not pursue the Trump U fraud cases for Florida individuals.
Of course not.
That's a bombshell.
I literally haven't heard anything about that at all. Nothing.
And now you know why. It really doesn't help the horse race narrative.
No, it sure doesn't.
So we're really not happy about the Beltway Opinion lately.
No.
As you can hear, they're really dropping the ball on this. And I still don't think Trump is going to win, but I really hope somebody does a really hard autopsy of media coverage of this election, because it has been horrifying.
I miss Jon Stewart. That was kind of his bag. It was like, look at, like, he was more critical of the media than he ever was of any politician.
Yeah,
ever.
And you know,
and his voice is
Larry Wilmore
missed.
And Trevor Noah, they're fine, but they just don't bring it.
Jon Stewart, his criticism of the media coming from a place inside the media, at this time, is sorely missed.
It is.
It's sorely missed.
He needs to be drafted back into.
Yeah. He's on a couple little things, but like, and I know he's got an HBO show, but it's going to be after the election. Like, it's just hearing him talk about it and having his team pull together these sort of tremendous montages of media fuck ups.
Because
it's undisputable when
because
you look at it that
the Daily
way.
Show became so popular that it became a story in itself that the media covered, and therefore some of the stories that he was presenting filtered out that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of people actually said, no, we actually get our news from the Daily Show.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Granted, it was heavily satirical, but there was stuff.
There was stuff
in there.
He never lied to you.
No.
And in his later years, his last like 3 or 4 years, his primary focus was how bad the media was, and it's never been worse than it is right now. And so I miss him terribly.
Yeah. Anyway, that is about going to wrap it up for us. It's good to be back. It's good to be back talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Got some interesting feedback from a couple weeks ago when we had Casper. Oh my God, I forgot his last name.
Right, the guy running against Dan DeGette.
Yep.
Yeah.
I gotta send him the link. I forgot about that. I don't think everybody's forgot about him. This is very nice of him to sit down and get grilled by me and my new friend Kevin for an hour and a half. That was really interesting and a bizarre night.
Yeah.
And then got some good feedback about replaying the Ted Cruz soup episode, which is one of our personal favorites.
It's my favorite one. I re-listened to it and I was giggling the whole time.
Yeah.
It's very good. But we'll be back soon.
We'll be back with guests. We'll get back on the agenda here and get back to having a real podcast. We won't leave you hanging.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Anyway, again, this has been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Soul.